Good evening, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and of course you lurking conservatives, and also you people that think I have a problem. I've been in here for one night for Malloy. One night! I was here one day, and granted there was only one problem, which I'll talk about later. My name is Mark Maron. This is the Mike Malloy Show. Mike Malloy is on vacation, a well-deserved vacation. I am told to spend some time with his children. Which is fine. It's great. Enjoy those children. I have none. But I am here. I am here for a few more days. I am not on radio anymore in any regular fashion. And I thank all of you who have emailed me by the dozens. I could say by the hundreds, but I don't want to exaggerate. This is about truth. I know we're all truth seekers here, so I'm not going to exaggerate, which I don't. I usually err on the side of insecurity as opposed to exaggerating. So I've gotten some nice emails. It was very nice to be on the air. My buddy Don, who was with me last night, has come down with the thing. So he's not going to be in here. He came over to my house to tell me he got the thing, but he didn't. I had to talk him out of not coming. I don't know when diseases, or whatever they are now, what used to be a cold, what is it now? I don't even know. There's something that starts like a cold. It's like, I think I got a cold, and then it becomes something else. It turns into bronchitis, and then blood is coming out of your ears, and then you get over it for a few days, and then it comes back. The diseases are getting stronger because there's so many antibiotics in the meat. There's so many people over-medicated that take antibiotics for anything. And also the diseases are just becoming more strong and new and excited at because of global warming and this and that, changes in the environment. You know, ultimately, after all is said and done, the renegade strands of DNA that determine a virus will win. And we will be, we're not going to be able to stand up to that. Even the dinosaurs, I think, went down because of something like that. So I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but despite all the problems we may have, the best thing we could do is try to save the planet on some level so those things don't get out of hand. I've talked about that in a little while. That's a pretty negative way to start. Speaking about bugs, if anybody can help me out with aphids, I know I don't want to be trivial. I know there's a lot of things going on in the world we need to address. But today when I was panicking about what I was going to talk about and whether or not I was going to get all consumed with politics and all the big issues, I decided to tend to my one rose bush. I have one sad rose bush that was on my property before I bought it. And it's all of a sudden it's going to get roses. And I look at it and it's covered with bugs. I have no idea how to get rid of aphids. So I got online. There's obviously a million different ways to do it. So I will share with you what I did. And maybe somebody can give me a better solution. And I hope this isn't trivial. It's important. I mean, plants are important, right? It's a progressive issue, how to tend to the plants. But I read somewhere that if you hang banana peels over the rose plant, that the aphids will go away. So I don't know if I'm an idiot, but I ate a couple bananas, and now I draped my rose bushes with banana peels. Is that possible? Is that possible that that could help? Also, another thing I did today outside of, let me give you the number, 800-989-1480. Please, that's it. That'll be a rolling advice call that I could use an answer to, the aphid problem, because I'm picking them off. I've become kind of a gardener since my wife left me because she did a lot of gardening. And I don't know if it's a nostalgia thing for me to keep all these plants alive or some sort of sign of maturity, but I've become somewhat of a gardener. Okay, that said, I did something today that I think a lot of Americans do, and I don't know if it's right or wrong. I'm under the impression that it is an okay thing to do politically, but I joined Costco, and I'm not necessarily proud. I guess it was only a matter of time. My father is a strong advocate of Costco. He likes to stockpile food. I do not have a bunker. I do not have a family. I have no real reason to start amassing large bundles of pretzels, large packages of socks, maybe some tires. I don't have any reason to do that. I have a small house. The reason I went was really a drug issue. I have a nicotine problem. I haven't smoked cigarettes in about 7 or 8 years, but I tend to get strung out on cigars occasionally, not because of the affectation of the cigar. I'm not a cigar aficionado, but occasionally I smoke them because of the amount of nicotine in them. And it's a smooth discharge of nicotine over about an hour, which for a drug fiend like myself who thrives on nicotine is perfect. But obviously there are downfalls. There's a downside to cigar smoking. It's obnoxious. It connotes a sort of arrogance or fake elitism. It's ugly. It causes mouth cancer. I do inhale them sometimes without knowing it, so it makes my lungs hurt. So I need nicotine gum. So I joined Costco primarily, and I'm being honest with you, for the bargain on nicotine gum. But here was the fascinating thing. Costco is such an amazing indicator of what American consumerism looks like in the day and age we live in, that this is a value store that forces people to buy huge quantities of everything. And I don't have room for it. And I went in there. I had no idea that every Costco is a town. I had no idea that when you go to a Costco, you're dealing with something that, if there was, God forbid, a real meltdown of some kind, I know that I'm not going to be able to get out of Los Angeles. I know I'm not going to be able to get out of my car and get on a highway and get away from whatever disaster has happened, whether it's nuclear, a tidal wave, who knows what, some sort of terrorist attack, I don't know. But I know that I will not be able to get out on those highways. I can barely get out in the morning if I need to drive across town. God forbid there be some disaster. But I'll tell you one thing, I think I'm going to upgrade my Costco membership to executive because you can get in an hour early. I do know that if there is a disaster through side streets, I could get to that Costco, and whoever is in that Costco with me will be all right for at least 3 or 4 months. With food, we'll be all right with clothing. We'll have plenty of nicotine gum, canned goods. We'll be able to cook for each other. We'll be able to watch any number of large screen TVs and probably get a few new cell phones. It's all there for you. But it is a great example of value and consumerism in America, because the idea of value is that you save money. But the catch to it is, which I think is fundamentally an American way of thinking, is that I get a lot of it. I got a lot. So I get there, and I'm overwhelmed. I get my nicotine gum. I got 4 bottles of Cetaphil soap for my face. That'll last me a year, because it's just me now. I bought some highlighters for some reason because they were pretty and they came in a lot of colors and it was $10 for like 90. Bought some pens. I like a certain kind of pen. I bought 5 reams of paper for less than $20. And I walked out feeling like I was a citizen of Costco. I felt like I was part of an American ideal Costco. But this was what fascinated me, and it's a weird moment to even talk about. And I don't even know what it implies. But I leave Costco. I put my stuff in my car, and I'm a guy, generally, I had to teach myself how to do this, because I had to learn a lot of things, because I'm fairly selfish by nature. I've had to change my life a lot to behave properly, which I think everyone should admit. I know there's a lot of people out there, progressives especially, because we are self-aware, or are supposed to be self-aware, and are supposed to be honest, and supposed to, you know, be seekers of truth and justice, that a lot of us aren't really capable of assessing ourselves and being honest about that. We'd rather be strident and passive-aggressive and pretend like we're good people. But that aside, maybe we'll cover that later. So I get out of Costco, and in front of Costco, there's like a restaurant, just people shoveling pizza into their face. It's like they're spending the day there, like it's Disneyland. I mean, literally, there was like 50 people eating out in front of Costco at the Costco restaurant. It's a Wednesday, man, a Wednesday at 11 in the afternoon. Like, people are going to spend the day. It's like Six Flags over consumerist America. I mean, what is that? Is that a theme park for some people? Some people get that elation from seeing that much stuff available to them as club members at a special low price cost. So I get into the parking lot, and I'm a guy who had to teach myself how to be polite and do the right thing in a lot of ways. And I'm usually a guy that puts his shopping cart into the rack of shopping carts, because I know some guys being paid to do that horrible job to move those carts back into the Costco or make them available to other people. And for some reason, I think it was because the idea of entitlement, the idea of just the scope of what I can have as an American,
that I just walked out of Costco where I can get anything, tons of it, for a lower price than anybody else. I'm special. It's just me. I'm the king of my box of stuff. And I just stuck my cart right alongside another car, did not walk it back. That's what Costco did to me. Gave me a selfish entitlement. 800-989-1480. Marin in from Malloy. See you on the other side.
And I encourage you all to go shopping more.
In for Malloy, talking about consumerism, talking about Costco. I guess I got the stamp of approval. I knew Costco was good. Most of their donations are to Democrats. But it's still, it's good to a degree. Like I said, I cannot shop there a lot because there's so much stuff, and it just reminds me how small my life is. But that's okay. I'm enjoying my small life. I don't know if I'm cut out for the children. I don't know if it's going to happen, though I know Mike had one pretty later on in life. I guess it's always possible. I have some aversion to it, to being, I have kind of given myself a cutoff on that, and I'll explain why in a second. I have got some aphid calls, and I hope it's not too trite for you people. And I did get an IM from somebody saying roses is a rating killer. Look, the rose bush was there, man. And it's, plants are nice. I got that part of me, man. There's something inside. I got some hippie in me, and there's no way around that. And I've got some other stuff in me too. I'm one of these weird guys. I've been doing comedy a long time, and I kind of fall in the middle. You know, I can do a progressive talk show, but I can also sit on the Opie and Anthony show with those monkeys and do their thing. Just as long as I draw a line with certain things and get out before it gets too ugly. I'm a pretty broad personality person, and I want to have a discussion about some email I got about something I said last night about the issue of misogyny and language, because I know in my heart I'm not a misogynist. But let's stick with bugs right now just for a second so I can, you know, solve this problem. I think this is somebody I haven't talked to in a long time. If it is, hold on. Brian, is that you?
Yeah, misogyny and language?
No, we're talking about bugs, man.
Oh, the chick bug. You just get rid of the female bugs. No, cigar smoke will kill your aphids. Well, it's a global warming thing where it's like a waste product of something is always good for something else. So it's like everything is in constant. Everything has a use, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like if you can, and I learned, you know, basically what happens is I'm just blowing smoke.
Yeah,
but actually, I have a rose bush too, and I really like to see the flowers, and it reminds me of how beautiful things are that aren't human.
Yeah, that's
and
exactly.
I don't mean to think I don't like humans in general. I mean, I do like the cat has human qualities because maybe I've done things in anger, thrown her off the bed or something. But that she's only learned that from me.
So you're saying that you put human qualities on your cat. What is that called?
Transference.
It's a little bit of transference, but I think there's actually a word for putting human projecting.
Abuse?
Human. Yeah,
no,
that could be.
No, actually, no. To tell the truth, that what it comes down to. Is that I see the beauty of nature and the wonders of the way the order of nature, as far as how species are organized in ascending orders of consciousness, like from, let's say, an aphid is very little conscious, you know, mm-hmm. to a man that is more conscious, you know,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and how it all not just a food chain, but an order of consciousness,
yeah.
and there's shifts back and forth with reincarnation and stuff like that.
Well,
but,
you know, I appreciate
the problem
that.
Is the problem is people think they're God sometimes. You know,
I did when I was pulling aphids off singly by myself. I was
and you know what? They didn't know what hit them, and there'll be legends.
I'm an angry God.
There'll be aphid legends about
that's
the
right.
Day.
Exactly when the giant bearded man came and took our brethren.
Brian, yeah. It's good to talk to you. You sound pretty good.
I'm pretty good. I'm tapering off the medication. I haven't had alcohol for like 3 months or so.
Oh, congratulations.
And
that's
you know
that's
what?
Big.
I the only thing worse than alcohol is going to a meeting, and nothing personal. But,
now, wait a minute, man. You know, the help is help. You know, you can't judge help. And no,
I don't judge. I know, but it's like it's just that there are different energy levels of people and different tensions of people. And I'm so sensitive. I mean, all I have left is an optic nerve. That's all
yeah.
I have.
You're just
I don't
a walking
have,
optic
have,
nerve?
I don't have really bodily functions that work so much, you know, just to get up and go to the can and stuff. But it's like I have an optic nerve, but I had kind of a near-death experience. And it's like I remember someone was playing The Power of Now
yeah.
on the radio.
Right.
And I was – and somehow – and I was almost – I was so toxic and poisoned.
Yeah.
I started visualizing myself growing eyeballs out
yeah.
of my one little optic nerve on the back of my head, you know.
Right, right.
And so it's like, wow, that was cool. But you know,
well, you know, you sounded you sound like you're using your imagination in a proactive way.
Yes,
Brian,
I am. Well, what I've noticed often sometimes is let me tell you something. Let me tell you this. That
I'm
there
not
are,
cutting you up.
I'm running this. Let me tell you. There are definite things that trigger that, and I put it this way: if you've been through a traumatic
yeah.
experience, we talk
yeah.
about post traumatic stress. You talk about like they say John McCain or something like that.
Yeah,
been through a post traumatic stress experience, and then you've got that raw nerve that's been tortured, or you know, not physically or psychologically
yeah.
or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And if someone and it doesn't happen deliberately, it's what maybe the Jungian morphogenic field.
All right, close
you know?
It up, buddy. Close it up.
Is that if there's it's like the idea of apocalypse and prophecy and global catastrophe.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that's always been around and still hasn't happened.
I really thought we were going to get a solid point out of that. Brian from Everett, it's always good to talk to you, man. Thanks for calling. He used to call my old show, and I think that was relatively enlightening. He brought McCain in, so it became political. I will start talking about larger things, and I will keep rolling these calls for aphids, and I will be talking about going to Scotland and more about consumerism and what it does to us and what being in a culture completely dictated by the market makes us all cynical and makes us all selfish. It's Mark Maron in for Malloy. Stick around. Folks, it's Maron in for Malloy. The number here is 800-989-1480. I've opened up a bag of aphids. It's interesting to me that that people know about this stuff, that they're interested in it. I want to talk about consumerism. We started this with Costco. We started this with me challenging myself and trying to understand what makes me who I am? What makes Americans Americans at this juncture in history? Seriously, what makes us who we are? What does freedom mean? What are we defending? Why do they hate us? Before I get into that, because I'm going to talk about a trip to Scotland. Before I get into that, let's get my buddy Andrew on the line here. He's calling. He just texted me in three different devices here. I get an IM from him, and then I get a text on my BlackBerry, and he's waiting on – basically, he wants special treatment because he's my friend. Am I understanding that properly, Andrew?
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. This is Andrew Goldenhurst, one of the great close-up magicians, folks. I have a friend who is a bona fide magician, and he's good. Go to goldenhandsmagicisit.com?
It's goldenhands.com. Wow, thank you.
Yeah, he is, and I'm not a magic guy. You know, I'm not a magic guy, and I wouldn't have solicited a friendship with a magician hadn't he liked me first. So, Andrew's a guy that can manifest butterflies out of nowhere and pull rabbits out of his head. And not out of a hat, out of his head. He can manifest butterflies from tattoos. He's very kind to insects and is going to solve my problem. Are you going to come over and magically make them disappear, Andrew?
Well, theoretically, yeah.
Oh man,
I do have the answer though. I mean, you know, I've certainly spent some time studying insects.
Bring it.
You ready?
Yes.
Ladybugs.
Yeah, a lot of people have been saying that. So where do I get ladybugs? You can just go buy ladybugs and dump them on
something? You can. I can even tell you the place in the valley where you can get them.
You've got a connection for ladybugs?
I've got a connection.
And butterflies?
Well, I'm working on a ladybug.
And large scarab beetles for you to manifest out of a child's ear?
Actually, those are just for eating.
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, yeah. You know what those people who fry bugs...
Yeah,
the people who fry bugs and they're like, really, they're good. They're full of protein. It's like, you know what? I could eat something else. I could have some yogurt.
Yeah,
it always seems to me to be a challenge. Like they defy you to eat a bug,
right,
so you can say you can eat a bug.
Right. It is a pretty interesting head trip to go through that. You
know? All right. When's the next dinner party? How's Allie doing? Everybody all right?
Everyone is great.
I think
the next party is the 20th.
I'm going to be in Australia, and this might be the segue I need into my next piece of information. I'm running a very powerful show here about aphids and Costco.
You are indeed.
You know how I roll. All right, I'll talk to you later, bro.
You got it. Great to hear.
Thanks. Bye. I just broed. I'm trying to cut down on the bros. So here's the deal. I'm trying to figure out, on some level, what freedom means and what is really offensive to other cultures about our culture. I mean, some of that is easily answered by any of us. Obviously, as a nation being driven by a bunch of renegade lunatics, a bunch of, you know, neocon death cult and the Christo-fascist zombie brigade, and what they have done in terms of how we are taken in around the world, how we are not taken in, how we are not tolerated anymore, how we are looked down upon, certainly not respected for the actions of this government, that I go to Scotland last August to perform at the Fringe Festival. And you know me, I just want to go and talk about my stuff. So I get this gig. I'm there for a month. I'm freshly separated. I'm a mess. I'm an emotional disaster. And I'm in another country. But they put us up nice, and Scotland is beautiful. There's no doubt that Scotland is beautiful. And I was happy to be there. But the audiences, I could not get across to them. And one of the issues really was that they don't like Americans anymore. They just don't, and I don't want to generalize. I'm not saying all of them. Obviously, some of them respect American comedy, certainly, but there was something about it. There was just something about an American coming there and talking to them that pissed them off, and it was because of our president. It was because of the boy idiot, but I didn't know how to handle it, because after a certain point, look at the material I'm doing. I'm definitely critical of my country. I'm definitely critical of my country's policies. Why don't you accept me and let me be critical and you can get some joy out of that? But a lot of them were resistant even still. So I got to be honest with you. I became more patriotic than I am known to be. But the patriotism wasn't rooted. There was some sort of moment where I was like, are you provincial alcoholic idiots going to tell me from the greatest country in the world that you're not going to accept me? And I had this weird moment. And I tried to, in that moment, I tried to think about what I was defending. And there were actual moments where I'm like, you've only got like three kinds of cereal here. I mean, I go into a store, you go to America, you got like 20 different kinds of mustard and a whole aisle of cereals. That's what freedom looks like. Freedom of choice, my friend. Is that what we're defending? Is that the idea of freedom? That you can go into an American supermarket, that you have the freedom to buy whatever you want if you can afford it, and even if you can't afford it, you can put it on credit and get yourself into debt and make it look like you can afford stuff. And on some level, that is a big part of the freedom that we experience. And it's a weird thing to defend because it's very empty. And I'm reading a new book by a guy named Morris Berman, who has blown my mind before with a book called The Twilight of American Culture. I'm now reading Dark Ages in America. And he posits the argument. It's not even an argument. It's an astute observation that when a culture or even a world becomes completely dictated by the market, that everybody becomes more selfish, communities are disrupted, people no longer are considerate, people are cynical, everything is untethered from everything that we used to know that made this country great. Everybody is their own brand, their own island, their own little renegade capitalist capsule, and that's all they think about. And it's a very interesting observation. And it was interesting to me how frustrated I got in Scotland because I felt like an outsider. And I started to be very critical of them, which is not always the best tact to take when you're a guest in another country that you're frustrated with because they don't like you because you represent everything that they hate. And I began to get sort of critical of them. And I, like a couple of things I said that sort of set them off. Not really set them off. They actually laughed. But I was in Edinburgh, Scotland for a month. I saw two black people. Two. And I was like, how is that possible? And it started to aggravate me. And I started to say, look, I come from a large city. And I don't understand. Someone explain it to me. What are you doing with your black people, Scotland? Where are they? What are you doing? And I said, is that what haggis is? Are you grinding up your black people and pushing them off as regional cuisine to unsuspecting tourists? And, of course, that got quite a big, shocking bit of laughter. And then I started to say, honestly, there's a couple of memos they didn't get across the pond there. And one of them is that alcoholism is a disease, not a way of life to be defended and proud of. And also, maybe you shouldn't have a portion of pig and butter with every meal. You think? Maybe not. I mean, if you think about it, here in America, in some circles, a full English breakfast is an attempted suicide. It can really be seen that way. But the thing that really baffled me, and this gets back to the point, is that I didn't see a lot of obesity in Scotland. I couldn't understand it, given that diet, given all that butter, all that pork, all those beans, and maybe not beans, but what else did they, what is the British diet? It's pretty daunting. But not a lot of obesity, and I couldn't figure it out. And because everybody in this country, every other person is the size of a truck. And this is going to shock some of you. So brace yourselves, because I figured it out. Apparently, in other countries, in between meals, they stop eating. I know, it's unheard of in America. It's part of our basic freedoms. If you've got a spare second, shove something into your pie hole. Do your part to keep this economy afloat. We don't manufacture anything tangible. We don't manufacture products. We don't manufacture cars or tools. We don't manufacture anything but need and appetite and debt. We are the world's mouth. Do your part. Keep things moving. Eat something. Step up to the buffet. Get some food between you and your feelings before they lead to questions. Hey, maybe that Warner Rock's not such a great idea. Ooh, Mike, they got donuts! Krispy Kreme at a buffet, how often does that happen? I don't know, Bush is awful, and I think we're all doomed. Oh, ambrosia, I love ambrosia. It's like Jell-O and pudding mixed together. This is the best buffet I've ever been to. And there's 900 kinds of cereals. So that's a consumer riff, in a way, because, but I'm guilty of it. I'm a guy, you know, I like food. I have food issues of my own. I feel like it's part of my the great liberty of America that I can buy the kinds of food that I want when I want them. If I leave the house, even if it's just drive for a half an hour, you know, I got to pack a lunch, a thermos. I got to get a sleeping bag, a tent, make sure I've got chips. I'm just that, and I start to realize that that is part of the game here, that we are all on some level brainwashed to be just little consumption machines, and this is no great revelation, certainly to people that listen to this type of radio, but it's daunting to me. I mean, I am at a point in my life where I have to consciously not only maintain a certain level of conscious self-awareness and tolerance and keeping awake just on a political level, but just on a personal level. I mean, I am sometimes I drive by a Starbucks and I feel like it's my responsibility to stop and drink some coffee. Not a choice. A responsibility that they trigger something in me, like, oh, there's one, and there might not be one for three blocks, so I you know, maybe I should get some. Maybe I should fuel up. Maybe I should just elevate myself through caffeine into a temporary state of mania so I feel like I have clarity and I can tolerate the world. Maybe that's what I need. Yeah, I better stop. Okay. 800-989-1480. It's a Mike Malloy Show. I am Mark Maron. I am in for Mike Malloy. The conversation continues.
All right, folks, it's Marin in for Malloy. He's out for this week enjoying some time with the family. 800-989-1480 is the number to talk to me. We're talking, I guess it would seem, about consumerism, about American culture abroad, about some things that I have to deal with on a day-to-day basis as I head to Australia this Saturday for my second journey to Australia. The first one was bad. I was in Melbourne, and I got sent home, and that's a long story. I'm not sure I want to get into it because it's not even that exciting. It's sad. It's sad. But I am going to Sydney. I've never been to Sydney. Now, let me quickly get through some calls here about the aphid problem, which I feel like we've solved, but I don't want to deny people their chance to tell me differently. Kevin, listening to KPHX out there in Arizona, what's on your mind? Help me out. Kevin, are you there?
Oh, hello.
It's Mark.
Hey, Mark, on the air. How you doing?
I'm okay.
Your computer back?
Yeah, everything's okay.
Okay. You're talking about the aphids.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, I called earlier. Anyways, Dr. Bronner's hemp soap.
Yeah.
Is the best thing to do.
Okay, so spray it in a bucket or spray. How do you do it?
Well, you dump it on there?
Well,
you take a handful to a gallon of water.
Okay.
And then you put it in, like, in the spray bottle and spray it on all your plants. I put it on my poppy plants.
All right, so maybe I should pull the banana peels off of the rose bush and then hit
it with some... Well, that's going to attract more bugs.
Yeah, but I was told that, you know what, okay, you know, I like Bronner's. I'm a big supporter of Bronner's. I do believe it's a miracle soap, as it says on the bottle.
And with the soap, what are you buying that soap at Costco for?
I'm not going to buy Bronner's at Costco. I didn't see it there.
No, but the other soap you're buying, that pH soap?
No, I didn't buy any. No, you're thinking of somebody else. You've made up a mark in your head that you're communicating with.
No, you said you went to Costco and bought a bunch of...
Oh, right, Cetaphil. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Bronner's is better than that stuff.
Yeah, Bronner's can be a little harsh on the face. Can't believe we're having this conversation on nationwide radio, but I think the Bronner's can be a little harsh on the face. I got to take care of my face, Kevin.
Yeah, but no, you got to dilute the Bronner's 50-50
okay.
with diluted water.
Okay, but are you a representative for Bronner's? Or
no.
You're just loyal.
I'm a representative. No, it works good on my plants. It keeps it off my opium, my poppy plants.
You're a Bronner's loyalist.
No, not really. But the other thing I got to tell you, talking about earlier, Costco, you went and bought all those markers, right?
Yeah, right.
Never mark anything with anything other color than yellow.
Okay.
On the markers, because if you copy it, it'll show black like a CIA document.
Well, I happen to be going over some CIA documents now that I think the CIA has about me, so I want to, jump there.
But highlight everything in yellow. Yellow is the best because if you copy it,
it won't
show black.
I appreciate the advice, and it was great talking to you, Kevin. I'm going with Bronner's. I'm going to use that one. I'm not going to go buy bugs. I'm going to take the banana peels off. I've got my solution. I appreciate it. But the way he was supporting Bronner's, that's an interesting thing to me in the conversation we're having about consumerism, is that brand loyalty in America is almost like a religion. I have been very committed to several different brands throughout my lifetime in an almost fanatic way. And I've had the Bronner's thing. I've been that way with Bronner's. I've been that way with Coca-Cola, despite the fact that it may not be politically correct or not. There have been periods of my life where I was just committed to brands only because they planted that seed in my head. That's what happens. And even when I try to fight seeds being planted, that's what happens. The real American religion is brand loyalty and consumerism. I just wish that it would trickle over. I wish that people saw real religion in the same way they see brands. Because really, on some level, that's what it is. You choose to believe. We choose to believe. We're brought up with something. Something is planted in our head by some vicarious way. Who knows how it gets in there. But people, human beings, whether it's genetic or biological or learned or not, seem to need to believe in something. Some don't. I mean, there are atheists and there are people that just close off all of that. Just shut the channels of belief off and live a completely rational, practical life based in mathematics and reason. I have no problem with that. They may be right, but to me it's kind of uninteresting. You seem to be diminishing a sort of poetic, a process of imaginative speculation that might be exciting for you. But you make the choice you make, and I find those people to be a little bit controlling and somewhat boring, but I understand where they're coming from, and I don't judge them. I just did, though, didn't I? Okay, I do judge them, but they're necessary.
But what I'm saying is that if people thought about gods the same way they thought about brands, maybe there'd be a lot less problem. I mean, you don't hear people say, you know, I never buy anything but Chevys. You know, Chevy's my car. I'm going to stick with Chevy for my life. And then another guy says, really, I like Fords. The Chevy guy doesn't go, well, then you deserve to die. You deserve to die. What's wrong with you? How could you think that way? How can you be a Fordist? I think that the idea about religion, and it also frightens me. It frightens me because evolving into a conversation I'd like to have after the top of the hour about the idea of misogyny and sexism, and it's a second offshoot to what I'm about to say now, is that theocracy, if you want to know what theocracy looks like, look what happened there in Texas, in El Dorado, Texas. Look at that offshoot of the Mormon religion. That is what a theocracy looks like. It's an extreme version. It's obviously a version that involves polygamy, but it is what theocracy looks like. It is a completely managed state of belief and fanaticism to the point where you keep a population hypnotized to a series of rules that are ultimately, obviously, unconstitutional and illegal, but completely, you know, outside, off the grid, and destructive, disconcerting. Walking around in prairie dresses for a bunch of old men to have access to teenage girls. I mean, that's what the business is there. But theocracy is inherently sexist, inherently misogynistic and unconstitutional. So let's continue this conversation. I appreciate your calls. 800-989-1480. It's Marin in from Alloy. Folks, it's about 6 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. I'm in for Mike Malloy today. How are you, geniuses, philosopher kings, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and lurking conservatives doing out there? I'm having a little trouble with my computer. There seems to be news that I have not assessed. I'm trying to get it. 800-989-1480 is the number here. I want to take a call because somebody is calling from Mexico, and he has some comments on why people hate Americans. Javier, how are you? Nice to talk to you. You're on the air. Javier?
Oh, hey, how you doing?
Good, man. So you got a little insight?
Yeah, I'm calling from Mexico. How you doing?
You live in Mexico?
Yeah.
And are you a Mexican citizen?
Oh, yes, I am, but I was educated in the U.S.
And what is your sense of that down there? Do you hate Americans?
Oh, no, we don't hate America. We hate your president, and we kind of feel sorry for the guy.
You feel sorry for the guy, or you feel sorry for us? Because I don't think...
Oh, I feel sorry for you guys.
Yeah, yeah. Don't waste any tears on George Bush. He'll be fine.
Now, think of this, though. The guy could have been charismatic, and think of where we'd be then.
Right. So what's your sense down there? I mean, obviously, we understand why we're hated because of our the national sense of arrogance and the attitude.
Entitlement
and the basic
tone. Okay, there's entitlement and there's blind entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
Blind entitlement is where you feel entitled, but you don't know or care where it came from, and that's what's going on.
That's what you call being infantile.
Exactly. And mm-hmm. No, that's not fair to infants.
Yeah. So, well, I think, you know, if you're being infantile and you're in your 40s, that we can say that, you know, we're not talking about infants. But there is a sense of infantilization that occurs because of the economic system at hand here.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, it's global. It happens down here, too. I mean, entitlement is just incredible. It's taken off like a disease. Obesity, same here.
Yeah,
it's taken off. It's rampant. We're in trouble.
Well, thanks for your
You know, it becomes one of those issues of how do you do something about that? But I tell you, you know, it was good talking to you. I like talking to somebody who's in another country. Take care, Javier.
I don't know how you take care of something like that. What are you supposed to do? How are you supposed to? You know, I've made suggestions that have gotten very bad response in terms of obesity. I got criticized for a bit I did. That I thought was a reasonable solution to the problem, though it was satirical. I said maybe we should, the Food and Drug Administration should get involved in a proactive way and create special task forces of fat marshals who are stationed at fast food outlets, at perhaps TGIFs, any place where you can easily just eat too much. And I think they should be undercover, not unlike the air marshals that I hear are there. I don't know if they're there, who are on airplanes, and if there's something that goes down, a terrorist activity, they jump into action like you're in a movie, and they take care of it. Thank God I haven't had to witness that. Perhaps a fat marshal should be stationed at these outlets, and if they see someone who weighs over 200 pounds, 250 pounds, about to dig into a sundae or a piece of pie or a second plate of food, they just show their card and say, please, put the spoon down. Put it down. I'm a U.S. fat marshal. Let's get you a healthier option. All right? No crying. Let's just, please, put the spoon down and step away from the sundae. Now, some people think that's fattist. I've been accused of being a fattist. And I don't know if that's really a hatred. I don't have a hatred against fat people. I sometimes am jealous of their ability to just continue. I would love to feel what that felt like, but I'm too self-conscious. But I feel bad for them, but I'm under the belief that in most cases, fat comes from putting things in your mouth. And then you get into almost a conservative point of view, that it's part of your responsibility to take care of yourself, no matter what kind of crap you get yourself into. And that's not always the case. Sometimes people are misled. And sometimes I think that one thing that's not taken into consideration when it comes to these cycles, even when you deal with the economic issues of this subprime mortgage crisis, is that when you blame the victim, you underestimate just how powerful. You know how many billions of dollars go into advertising food, into advertising anything, into political campaigns? Do you know how many billions of dollars go in to screwing our heads? Do you know how much they dump into pummeling our brains into believing something that we may not have even entertained, into eating something, into following something, into taking a course of action that may be against our principles or against our personal safety? I think that it's a form of coercion. I think it's a violence. I think that given that we are surrounded by propaganda of all kinds, not necessarily political, but consumerist propaganda at all turns, that it's almost a day-to-day mental raping. And eventually that is going to reap results, and it's going to reap results for corporations and make us believe things that we may not want to believe. And I don't think that is often taken into consideration, that the idea of free will is what it is. The idea of personal choice is what it is. But the idea and the reality of fortifying your personal free will and your personal ability to make choices that are proactive for you or even your own becomes significantly diminished by the amount of crap they pay billions of dollars to pummel our brain with to make us make decisions that may not be in our best interest and may only be spending money. I'm extremely frightened about the economy, and I wish I was more of an economic thinker. I have had some experience with what is going on now, but I've read some articles about the diminishment of the middle class almost entirely, and just, you know, what that looks like at this point in time. That, you know, they talk about a middle class right now. You know, Lou Dobbs talks about a middle class constantly, but I don't think they're creating a new middle class. They're obviously creating a new lower class. That this foreclosure issue, this mortgage crisis, is now become global. The IMF, the International Monetary Fund, has said that it's going to cost the world a phenomenal amount of money. I mean, phenomenal amount of money, like 900 and some odd billion dollars globally. And the thing I don't quite understand about this issue and about, you know, what the root of it is and why it's not an issue of why people took free houses. I mean, obviously, if you're offered a free house, you might want to question the integrity of that offer. But some people couldn't, and some people listen to people. You know, sales is part of the American way. America is filled with salesmen and con men who make people believe in spending their money or stealing their money or making that decision. And some people are suckers, but some people are just bullied by just too much propaganda. But the issue is that I don't understand is that Joseph Stiglitz, that economist out of Columbia, who's been very popular recently, wrote a book that I will find the name of in a minute, basically said that the reason this credit was made available, the reason that the credit became cheap and was sold to anybody who was willing to sign on to take those loans was because the central bank was panicking about the economy because of how much the war was costing. $10 billion a month. Iraq has become just a drain of all of our money, certainly America's. But the implications of this mortgage crisis are now affecting other markets around the world, and it is one of the greatest economic disasters since the Great Depression. But this guy Stiglitz, who's a smart guy and can trace this stuff back to this decision, that the reason the economy was faltering was because they were dumping so much money into this failed effort, this illegal war, that it crumbled the housing market. And it sent millions of people out on the streets and millions of homes heading towards foreclosure. Now, what I don't understand, and maybe I don't know, maybe I've not been paying close enough attention, which is certainly possible. I lead sort of a monkish kind of life. I only try to put select stuff into my head. And I am not, you know, looking at politics like baseball when I'm not on the radio every day. I'm sort of a broad stroke kind of guy. But what I don't understand is why a Barack Obama is not getting behind his stance about the war in the way that we can trace America's economic woes and this oncoming depression, this recession that we are definitely in, to that war, to this miscalculation, to this unending nightmare, that we can directly trace it. The mortgage crisis was a reaction by financial institutions to take action to stimulate the economy by making credit available and by putting into the hands of mortgage brokers who basically exploit people. They're parasites, and they misled people, and people wanted to have a home. Why aren't candidates talking about that, saying the entire economic issue right now is because George Bush and the neocon death cult made decisions based on lies to get us into a never-ending war that's going to seemingly bankrupt the country, at least? We're on the auction block, folks. Conversation continues. It's Marin from Malloy. About 22 past the hour. Mark Maron in for Mike Malloy today and tomorrow. Then I'm off to Australia. The number here is 800-989-1480. I was beginning to talk about economics in the only way I know, which is from a personal point of view. And it's interesting how dialogues start. You know, earlier in the show, we were talking about my aphid problem, and many people, this is what I love about progressives and also what can be ultimately annoying about us is, you know, I'm talking about aphids. Someone suggested ladybugs. And then I get an IM that someone says most of the ladybugs they sell are Asian, and the Asian ladybugs are destroying the native ladybug. If you plant native plants and avoid chemicals, the ladybugs will come. Now, is there anything that isn't Chinese at this point in time? Now, I don't want to sound like some sort of isolationist weirdo, but now the ladybugs are Asian as well? That's unbelievable. And it's an interesting issue that it's got environmental repercussions, and also there's something metaphoric about the fact that our country is basically on the chopping block. It's on the auction block. It's being bought out. It's being divvied up. There's not much left of it. And a lot of that is because of the irresponsibility of several Republican administrations, and maybe a little bit of some Democrat administrations. I don't want to blame completely on the Republicans, but deregulation, things that were done to spurn on the economy, have dug in a tremendous hole in our economy. But you know, primarily, there is a dangerous apocalyptic drain that is eating money and the lives of Iraqis, Americans, and coalition forces on a day-to-day basis that needs to stop. There's just no end to this in sight. But on also, I got some other criticism. It's not really criticism. It's part of a conversation that I got sort of attacked for bringing up Starbucks, that I'm hooked on Starbucks. I'm not. Someone said there are plenty of other local coffee shops to go to. I try to go to those. All I drink is black coffee. I don't need milkshakes. So I don't really, I do try to avoid Starbucks. I was making a point. And then I get another little bit of impulse, not impulse, but a little information. Don't be so hard on salespeople. Okay. You know, there are good salesmen. My brother is a salesman, and there are people that sell things they believe in. They got to like what they sell. They got to believe it provides a service. I'm not knocking capitalism. I'm not suggesting that we just need one radio show, one radio station, you know, one bank, you know, one. I'm not suggesting that. I just feel that the nature of the free market and the nature of the problems we're in and the idea of globalization is just a corporate free-for-all that diminishes people's interest in community, and it also diminishes the idea of people in general. I mean, when you look at this mortgage crisis, when you look at what's happening to all these middle-class people who are going to be put out of their homes that didn't expect it, didn't see this coming, there was no way to see it coming, but now are dealing with financial burdens that they can't handle, what happens to them? What happens to the homeless of America? Where are the homeless? What happens to the poor? What happens is they become marginalized, they disappear, they die, they get sick, they can't have health care. That's the way the system works. I'm that cynical on some days to think that they'll never have nationalized health care because they need the turnover. Once somebody is unable to play their part in a system like this, once the debt becomes too big or they haven't earned enough or created a life for themselves that would enable them to stay on top, they become disposable. And that's what frightens me the most about having a corporate-occupied government and having an ongoing war, is that people become disposable on all levels of society. I don't know what's going to happen to them. But getting back to the sales issue is I know that there are plenty of bad salespeople. And the one thing the free market doesn't take into consideration in all its idealism that it will level the playing field and the best will rise to the top is just it's garbage. Because they do not take into consideration greed, which is always going to it's going to win. Greed wins in the business world. And greed means at the cost of the bottom line, the cost of people's lives, at the cost of anything. That with greed, a free market can't work because people are disposable. People only care about their bottom line. They're going to lie. They're going to do whatever they can do to protect that bottom line. And they're going to screw with people's heads into believing something isn't true. I mean, just in my own mortgage, I mean, I was taken for a ride. And it happened. I put money down. I didn't have a subprime mortgage. I put some money down on a house. I'd never bought a house before. And when you don't buy a house before, I don't do enough homework. You know, I expect people to help me, which may be an infantile way of living a life. But I signed all these papers. I got a loan, and I'm signing all these papers. I got a real estate agent that wants me to spend money. I got the people that own the house that had a bidding war. They want to make their money. But I'm sitting here filling out this loan stuff, and there's a prepay penalty. I don't know what a prepay penalty is until my loan, I had to refinance. A prepay penalty, all that means is that if you change your loan within this time frame, you got to pay this percentage. That's a fortune. It's unnecessary and it's a racket. So, look, I'm not knocking all you honest salespeople out there, but you dishonest ones, I don't know how you live with yourself. No matter what you're selling, if you know it's crap, you're a crappy person. All right? You got issue with that? 800-989-1480. The conversation continues. It's Marin in for Malloy.
That's his name, don't you get it? Too much coffee, man. Do, 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 do.
What's that you said? What's that on his head? That is his head, man. Huh, yeah, he's too much coffee, man. What was the plan? He tells it like it is, but it isn't happening. He says, come in, Russ, what's happening?
Oh, you're killing me. Ian, you're killing me. It's Marin in for Malloy. The number here is 800-989-1480. It seems that the themes of today, obviously, are bugs, aphids. I got aphid problems. Not that big of problems. Better than ants. My cats have fleas, and they run from me when I try to put the stuff on them. What is it called? I can't remember what it's called. Yeah. Well, look. I got a bug problem. I see there are callers on the line here, and I just got an interesting IM from somebody. He said, I agree with the mortgage bit. Something I encounter at work, kindness is considered weakness. With that, there's a sucker born every minute type of attitude that you can't afford. I'm a guy that struggles to be open-hearted. I'm a very sensitive guy. I'm defensive. I'm a little insecure, and I tend to get angry about things that aren't even real. So to be kind in the world that we live in it takes a tremendous amount of courage and a tremendous amount of groundedness, if I could say that, and a certain amount of selflessness, which is completely antithetical to how most people operate in this world today. I mean, kindness without exchange, without seeking reward or to be celebrated for being kind. I was overwhelmed yesterday, for those of you who are listening, because a woman let me off on paying a parking ticket that I lost, that I don't even know how to receive kindness because it happens so rarely in any sort of genuine way. I feel that I'm kind, but not always. I know that I've been kind, you know, to get attention, but I think that I'm generally sort of respectful and I will defer to other people. But it's a sad state of affairs. And this, I think, has a lot to do with what Morris Berman was talking about in this book. I wish I could got him on the show. You know, I emailed the guy. The book I'm reading is America, the Dark Ages, or Dark Ages America. He wrote The Twilight of American Culture. He's basically a broad-based cultural critic, a very intelligent man. But some of the stuff he talks about, and Thomas Frank has talked about it in some of his earlier books, not the Kansas book, but One Market Under God, is that when the market becomes the guiding principle of culture, it cannot help but make the population cynical, selfish, self-serving, unable to maintain communities, insulated, only worried about their own success. And that becomes an ideology, a spiritual ideology, a personal ideology, not even a community ideology. But if you really think about the subtext of America, if you think about what the collective id is on a cultural level in terms of media, I mean, it's porn, it's poker, it's ultimate fighting, it's reality shows. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, that's what it, you know, people are sitting at home engaging in this stuff. This is what the id looks like. Porn, poker, ultimate fighting, and reality shows. So that's sex without feeling, lying to win money, fighting without rules, and rewarding amateurs. So that sweep of how we are mediated here and what is going on underneath it all is what business does, is what the market does. It's how we react to it. And the idea of rewarding amateurs, I mean, some people may, you know, take issue with me, but I do not like American Idol. I think it is a cancer. I think it's a cancer. And the fact that Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and John McCain are going to be on American Idol, I guess it's a benefit they do. So Idol Gives Back is what it's called. It gives back what it's taken from us culturally.
Same with the internet in some respects. Same with the idea of DIY culture. I know I'm all over the place today, but look, you know, I come from a time, and I think many of you do come from a time, back when America had a manufacturing base, America had some respect for craft of any kind, of some respect for things that took time. And to be part of a culture that is so short in its attention span and so hungry for bits of information to entertain them, that somebody who spends 20 years developing a craft and creating something with some integrity has to fight against, you know, a cat pooping in midair for 30 seconds is a crime to me. And I think it diminishes culture. I think American Idol, rewarding people who could be anybody for singing a song in a hackneyed way that was written by somebody else, it's like going up to people who are singing well in their car and giving them $50. Here's a record deal. Now, we heard you across the way. It's great. And this whole talent contest idea, yeah, metaphorically, I think that the only way American Idol could really be interesting is if they shot the losers right at the top of that hackneyed high note. And I'm not a gun guy. I know some people take offense by that, and I'm not even going to finish the whole joke because I know that that violence is bad, even though I just read that Florida lawmakers, the lawmakers in Florida, whatever that could mean, have just passed a gun law in the Florida Senate by 26-13 that would enable people to carry guns at work. The people that work there and the people that come into the place, they don't need to leave their guns in their car anymore. They can just take it out. They can just have it with them if they're licensed. And they're championing this as some testament of the Second Amendment in action. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. But that doesn't mean vigilante force. I mean, what the hell is the point of carrying a gun in public if you're not ready to use it? And who are you going to use it on? And who makes you the decider? Everybody works unilaterally in this country all of a sudden. Everyone's selfish. How is that not going to lead to complete chaos? You got two guys with guns just driving in their car, having a beer, coming home from work. They decide they're going to step into some altercation and start blasting away. And I'm not an anti-gun guy, but this is ridiculous. I'm rambling, but I enjoy it. Let's take some calls. Let's start with this guy's been on forever. It's a woman, I believe. Gypsy, listening in Memphis. How are you? You're on the air. I'm Mark Maron. How are you?
I'm doing good. I haven't heard you in years. I think I last heard you on KFI.
On KFI, really? I must have been doing a guest spot because that's not really my angle. But
yeah, it was. Yeah. I don't remember who you were filling in for, but this was years ago, and now I catch you on Sirius. I'm a happy camper tonight.
Well, I'm so happy to hear that. What's on your mind?
Well, you do realize, of course, that we live in an insane society.
Yeah, I do.
You're just preaching on note tonight so well, because I've been waiting for somebody to bring up this consumerism stuff. And, we are not citizens anymore. Our entire reason for existing is to consume what is produced.
That's right, and we're no longer connected or anchored in any sort of civic duty. I appreciate your call, Gypsy. Thanks for chiming in there, because that really is at the core of this issue. And I can't take responsibility for coming up with it myself, as some radio show hosts will do. But it was brought to me over several different readings from several different authors that, you know, if the market dictates how culture operates, we are all untethered from any sort of civic duty, from any sort of collective, from any sort of community interest. And civic duty, for most people, they don't even know what that means. They don't even know how to be involved in their government, nor do they care, as long as they're not the ones being pushed out of their house. But the fact that is, we have nothing to fall back on. If your whole life is dictated by how do I get ahead, how do I get that thing that guy has, that because mine's not that big, how do I make it okay for my family to have all the things that they want? If you take all that and that is the only reason why you exist in the world, what are you really made out of? What is your integrity as an individual? What is, you know, being free even mean? The freedom of choice, in terms of a supermarket sensibility, is not really what freedom means. I want to take this call.
It seems interesting to me. Lynn, listen down in Florida where my mommy lives. How are you, Lynn? On
hey.
WINZ, you're listening.
Yep.
Hey, wait a minute. I used to talk to you on the old show, didn't I?
Nah.
All right. What's on your mind, bro?
Never called before.
Yeah?
God, Mark is all over the place. I've got notes here. I don't know what to talk about. I originally wanted to talk about the selfishness angle. You know,
you're talking to Mark right now. You're on the air.
Oh, Mark. Are we on the air?
Yeah, you're on, buddy.
Oh, sorry.
It's all right, man.
You know, you started out the show talking about how you sort of fight your own selfishness.
I think we're still in that. I think we're still in that topic.
Yeah,
on some level.
I related to that, and it made me think of a thing I saw on TED.com last night. I don't know if you've seen that or not.
I spend very little time online. I entertain myself old school, just dread, panic, you know, revenge fantasies. You know, my kind.
Anyway, TED.com is an excellent site. They have a yearly convention where they bring in smart people to talk about stuff.
I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, it's excellent. And it's all free, you know, it's nice. Anyway, the guy, now, you know, I'm a radical atheist, so I'm not really a fan of the guy. But there was Rick Warren was on talking about essentially greed and everything. And he argued that all of the millions he's made from that purpose-driven life book,
yeah,
he gave it all away. He calls himself a reverse tither. He gives 90 and keeps 10.
You believe that?
He was convincing during the talk.
See, that's a good salesman. You know, when these guys...
Yeah, I'm sure he is. He's a pastor, you know. But I don't know anything about the guy.
Yeah.
He's an interesting concept, and he certainly sold it well.
Well, I think that if he's preaching true Christian values around the idea of selfishness, it can't be all bad. I mean, those values, they preexisted Christianity. They don't require Christ to be a decent person. And I think a lot of those guys have really sort of eliminated sort of deep or complicated or even recurring conversations about Jesus in their message. And I think that some of the old school Christians get kind of pissed off at those guys for not being Christy enough. But I understand what you're saying. Thanks for your call, man. I have a weird issue with that. I usually get uncomfortable with sort of unfounded confidence and preaching. Like, you know, people who read The Secret, it's like, it's the greatest book ever. No, it's not. You're delusional, not unlike many religious people. I mean, if you think the secret is that book should have one page, is a sucker born every minute. If you think that you can just sit around and wish for something and it'll come true, what are you, seven? Seriously, are you seven? Rules for being a decent person, being civilized and being community oriented and nice to other people do not have to be religious based. That's for sure. The conversation continues. Stay with me. It's Mark Maron from Hawaii, 800-989-1480.
Don't bug me, hug me. Put the lights soft and low. Don't bug me, hug me. Keep the music mellow and slow. Don't bug me, hug me. Kiss me good before you go.
There's a yellow rose in Texas that I'm gonna see. No other soldier knows her, no soldier, only me. She cried so when I left her, it like to broke my heart. And if I ever find her, we never more will part. She's a sweet...
All right, coming up on the top of the hour, it's Maron in from Malloy, who's on vacation spending some time with his family. 800-989-1480. Is the phone number here. I will be here tomorrow night as well, despite the request of one listener on an email yesterday. Maybe I'll get into that because I have been called out before on similar things, on a politically correct issue, perhaps. I am a comedian most of the time, but I wear the talk show personality hat because I am able to talk about many things and not necessarily have to be funny. I just got an interesting IM from somebody who was responding to The Secret, the book The Secret, has effed up a bunch of my clients who now feel guilty because they did all the stuff in the book. They did the stuff the book said, and they're still struggling. Then I have to deprogram them and tell them what BS positive thinking is. I prefer possibility thinking. It's less delusional. I love the show, Mark. I threw that in at the end. It's on there. I didn't have to, though. But that's the way I am. I can toot my own horn a little bit occasionally. Is that okay? I don't understand it. I don't, you know, I've never been a guy to think positively. I've always been more of the catastrophic trajectory. Not necessarily in a victim way, but I think I get it from my father. My father is one of these guys. He's a catastrophic thinker. He worries. He's angry. He's a little manic and a little depressive. But he's one of these guys that's so narcissistic that to think negatively, like the greatest example of it was, you know, I get these calls from him. He's like, we should just nuke the whole Middle East. And he's not really a conservative. He's an antagonistic guy one way or the other. We should just nuke them all. And then the other thing was, when we were about to bomb Iran, which we may still be about to do, though I don't think so. I don't think that's going to happen, even though a lot of people believe that we're preparing for that. He said, this is it. This is the end. The world is ending. And he had a certain glee in his voice, and I couldn't quite understand that. And I realized that he is so self-centered that the idea of the world ending before he does and the possibility of him not missing anything, I think, was exciting to him on some level. And that's catastrophic thinking. But I don't... You know, I got an email or an IM from an atheist. Look, I don't like religious fanatics. I think there are principles of living that can encompass all of the best of religious thought. I find that any type of fanatical commitment to any deity always leads to trouble. The atheists I've met that are radical atheists that can't stop saying that they're atheists, I find them irritating as well. It ain't easy for anybody. And it's not easy for me because if you have a brain that seeks to have answers to everything or control things or think you can see the future or constantly beating yourself up about the past, you got to have some relief to get you out of you. Now, whatever you're going to believe in, whether it's logic, rational thinking, however that works for you, I guess is your own bag. But the morality of people who are of a religious organization, that can be very annoying. Because it's imposing. But I find non-religious people can be that way as well. They can be imposing with their point of view. Now, let me just take a couple of calls because people are chiming in. We got some bug calls. I hear a knocking in here. It's making me nervous. There's a knocking in the studio. You know, I'm up here on the second or third floor. I think it's actually the fourth floor of the great Id Mill that is Clear Channel, overlooking where they taped the Tonight Show. But I want to hear what someone has to say about the housing crisis because, you know, I'm not an economist, but it just seems to me that we've been so sold upriver by this administration, so taken advantage of, that I cannot, when I start to put it all together, that when you look at the economic liabilities and the type of things that people are suffering through around fuel costs, around the housing problem, around jobs being lost, around health care, all this stuff can be traced in a lot of ways, not only to this administration and other Republican administrations, but also to the war, that the war has put such a tremendous strain on our economy. I just don't know why someone's not broad-stroking it. I don't know why Obama's not talking about that. Robin, listening on Sirius, it's Mark Maron. You're on the air.
Yeah, it all started with Ronald Reagan. But, hey, a few things here, Mark.
Okay.
First of all, with the housing, it's all about everything that Bush does is... The whole purpose of it is to put money in his or his lackeys' pockets.
Right.
The housing thing,
right,
that was all about the hedge fund guys and whatnot, and they're making out like bandits because they bundled those things together and sold them to different banks throughout the world, and they got their money, and that's it. You know?
Right.
There was actually an op-ed in, Wall Street Journal?
Yeah.
Where one of their editors... wrote an op-ed saying that the solution to the housing crisis was to take a wrecking ball to some of the houses because we have too many houses. So, you know, if you destroy some of the houses, you go into the supply and demand thing, that'll prop up the prices of what doesn't get destroyed.
That's right.
Can you believe that insanity?
It's crazy. Thanks for your call, Robin. I mean, it's crazy because it's a complete disregard for humanity. It's a complete lack of conscience. It's a complete point of view that only looks at poor people and people in general, people who can't make the grade economically, as grist for the mill. I think we'll talk a little bit more about this over the top of the hour. I also want to talk about language, racism, sexism, and being accused of being a misogynist. It's Marin in for Malloy. The conversation continues. Stay here. It's a bit after the hour, probably about 6 or 7 minutes, depending on what clock you're looking at. I'm Mark Maron. I'm in for Mike Malloy tonight and tomorrow. The phone number here is 800-989-1480. Still rolling calls about a series of things. Selfishness, bugs, the economy, the mortgage situation, a bit of that for my limited understanding of it. It's just that if you put it all together, these guys, the neocon death cult and their minions and their friends, have behaved like successful pirates, completely pillaging the ship estate here. If I put it all together, it's just baffling the mess they're going to leave the next person, whoever that may be. I personally hope it's Obama, so at least if he can maintain his disposition of hope and stay above the fray, that we will have a leader that will give us some of that in a collective way. You know, we're all the same, really, 99.999% the same as people. It's just that little one-tenth or one-millionth or one whatever it is, that small difference is what we've got in our heads and what dictates our behavior. And that's changeable for whatever reason, and it could be changed for the better. It's going to take a lot for us to muscle through whatever the hell's going to happen in the next 4 years. I'll tell you that right now, because when you look at what's going on in terms of the economy and in terms of who made out like bandits with all of this, you know, on the backs of the 4,000 and plus Americans that died over there in Iraq, on the backs of the thousands that have been injured, and some of them, you know, treated very badly upon their return, Iraqi civilians and the hundreds of thousands. I mean, on the backs of that, there was huge profits made by a bunch of conscienceless business operations and people. And a lot of it was only for that reason, and a lot of it continues to be only for that reason. You know, even in reading back on some of this stuff that went on yesterday, with Petraeus and some of the reactions there, and some of what Crocker, the ambassador there, the ambassador to Iraq, chose to say. Yeah, at one point he was being interrogated, he should have been more interrogated. They should have given them a little bit of what they give others in interrogation. The ambassador to Iraq, Ambassador Crocker, was talking to Senator Bayh. Said Osama bin Laden, quote, Osama bin Laden fairly recently referred to Iraq as the perfect base for al-Qaeda, end quote. And somehow in his mind he was spinning that to say that al-Qaeda is active there because of his success. The truth of the matter is, the reason why al-Qaeda is in a perfect situation there is that they're learning to fight as terrorists. They are learning. They are getting hands-on skills against our military in a completely destabilized zone that was our doing. And they're learning. They're training, not unlike bin Laden and his cohorts trained against the Russians at the behest of this country and the CIA secret operations there. So that's ongoing. And all of this is ongoing. And it's just starting to feel like these guys are getting their last wicks in, that George Bush and the neocon death cult are going to get their last wicks in. When you have Bernanke getting on, you know, from the Fed saying that it's Congress's problem, what's going to happen with the foreclosure crisis, with the mortgage crisis, just let it trickle down to the states. Let everyone deal with their new homeless problem. You know, I've gotten some interesting IMs from this. It's just baffling to me. Like here, somebody says, even before the war and the housing crisis, we were in a medical health crisis, a natural disaster crisis, one house fire, one car accident, one tornado, one hurricane, and people were shelter bound. Now with shelters above capacity, it's the street for a lot of people. And a lot of us who consider ourselves middle class or consider ourselves okay, you never assume this. You never assume that that's really true, that, you know, mommy's not going to be there, that your savings can't handle it. That, you know, look, I occasionally have health coverage depending on what union I make money through. You know, I'm a member of SAG, I'm a member of AFTRA, I'm a member of the Writers Guild. And, you know, and it's always been sort of tenuous because I haven't had a regular gig that's had consistent union protection. And I'm in the middle of a divorce, and I had to refinance my house. And the weird thing is I cut my finger 3 weeks ago. I cut my finger on a knife. And I literally had that moment where I'm like, I don't think I'm going to go to the emergency room. I'm going to ride this out. And I couldn't stop it from bleeding. But I didn't want to go for a couple of reasons. I thought it would be all right. But also, how much is that going to cost me? That I got to worry about that? And that's a minor problem. And the fact that most people, this is the weird thing about, I did a benefit for the separation of church and state. And one of the discussions they were having was that the religion has no place in medicine and science, which I believe is true. And religion shouldn't have a place in insurance either. And the fact that, you know, for about 45 million people, God is the only coverage they have is a disgrace. And I'm sitting here with a cut finger, second-guessing going to the emergency room out of fear of payment, and I'm thinking about people who are stifling cancer, you know, gangrene, who the hell knows what, because they can't afford it, they can't go see a doctor. I went to get stitched up, and they sold me on the stitching. I'm not even sure I needed stitches, but I got to that emergency room, and they're like, oh, yeah, you need stitches. Yeah, how much it cost to get 4 stitches in my finger? This is not including the visit, which is about $500. $2,000? How the hell can people afford that stuff without health care? I mean, if I'm a cut finger away from being half broke because of my current situation financially, I can't even imagine what people are going through otherwise. And I just hope, I have faith in something working out, but man, what a mess it's going to be for the next 4 years. Let's turn it around a little bit. Let's get back to bugs. Kirk, you've been listening a long time up there in Portland on KPOJ, and you're a certified horticulturist. What do you have to tell me?
The easiest way for you to get rid of your aphids is go out in the morning and just turn on the hose and blast them off with water.
Okay.
That's the easiest way to do it. And as far as the whole consumerism thing,
yeah,
the easiest way to get out of that habit is move a couple times.
Yeah.
I'm in the present situation of actually leaving the country since I have been unable to find a job in over a year. And I thought I had very little things. And even the little bit of stuff I have is driving me crazy, and it's finding homes elsewhere. But it's just another addiction.
That's right. Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it's an addiction that is supported and enabled by the economy, and it is absolutely necessary. Thanks for your call. I definitely know that feeling of when you move. There's that moment where you've packed everything in boxes and it's all out, and all that's left is maybe your couch and your bed or your futon and one chair, and you're like, oh, my God, this is the way it should be. The next place I'm going to move to, I'm just going to have this. I'm just going to have the chair and the bed. This is perfect. And a clock and one pot. Never happened. Never happened to me. All right. Peter, listen on Sirius in Illinois. What's on your mind? You're on the air with Mark Maron.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm okay.
To follow up on the aphid deal, what if you sprayed a little vinegar on it? I think that works.
Okay,
sprayed
great.
A little vinegar on the plant, you know?
Yeah.
Some pure vinegar.
Okay.
What do you think of, I don't know if you've ever heard of Ravi Batra.
I have not.
Okay, he's an SMU economist. I think he's of Southeastern origin. But at any rate, his take on the economy is that, and he's considered a maverick, by the way, his take on the economy is that depressed wages is really what's brought us to this point, wages that have not kept up with inflation. And so basically, you got a middle class out there that's been borrowing because their wages haven't kept up with the desired lifestyle. And I'd give you a perfect example. If I wanted to buy a brand new truck, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to mortgage my house. You know
That's
what
right.
I mean?
That's right. I hear you. That makes good sense to me. Let me give you some numbers. Thanks for your call, Peter. I'll give you some numbers here. Now, this is from a recent survey by the Pew Research Center. Okay, they're reputable. Is that the right word? Reputable? Not. Yeah, they have a good reputation. Now, 53% of adults in the country who define themselves as middle class, with household incomes ranging from below $40,000 a year to $100,000. Okay? One in four, 25%, said their economic situation had not improved, while 31% said they had fallen backward. Okay? Those numbers, the highest since the survey question was first asked in 1964. 54% said they had made no progress. All right, that's 20, yeah, that's... And 28%, that means between the two, 54% said they made no progress, and that 26% said they made no progress, and 28% said they were falling back. 53% of the middle class people said they had to cut spending because money was tight. One in five said they had trouble getting or paying for medical care. 10% reported they had been laid off or otherwise lost their jobs. And that stuff is escalating. That's not changing. And the stagnation of wages is brilliant because things aren't getting cheaper. Unless you go to Costco, then you got to buy an awful lot of it. But anyways, let's get into that conversation I was talking about earlier about misogyny and language, I think. Stay with me. It's Marin in for Malloy. Conversation continues. Marin in for Malloy still tonight and tomorrow. Mike is enjoying some time, some R&R. 800-989-1480 is the number. Talking about a lot of things, been a little all over the place, but it seems to be thematic. I never know. I'm operating without a net here. I don't have a producer. I got Ian in the booth picking the songs and talking to you people on the phone. That was Moon Martin, I think. I used to have that record when I was a kid. Was I a kid? So look, let me just take. I just want to take a couple calls that are still lingering from some of the older topics, and I want to shift gears here. But this guy is a banker, Steve in Framingham, listening on the internet. Framingham, Mass. I used to do gigs out there. I lived in Boston for like 7 or 8 years.
Hey, Steve, how you doing?
All right, buddy. What's up?
I mean, I'm sorry, Mark Maron.
Yeah,
I used to listen to you when you were on Air America. That was great. Loved it, and I miss you on there.
What kind of banker are you?
I am a commercial loan officer.
Yeah, so what do you got? What do you enlighten me somehow?
There's so much to tell you.
Well, what's on your mind? What are you reacting to?
When I was listening to you, you had brought up a lot of questions, and it's all connected. The mortgage problems.
Yeah.
It also goes with the small business problems that we're having that's not being talked about really. There is a shortage of money in the country, and the reason why is because the war budget is $1 trillion this year. That is one out of every $3 of the entire U.S. budget. Now, normally, during Bush and Clinton, it was $250 billion. In a very large budget. Now it's $1 trillion.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be the big drain. And the interesting thing to me, thanks a lot for your call, Steve. The interesting thing to me is that for a country that is so pro freedom, pro democracy, pro entrepreneurship, even in the conservative way, that what is happening is something that looks more and more like totalitarianism every day in a type of fascism that, when you talk about small businesses dying, when you talk about the national treasury being depleted completely and the national debt being so high that not only could we not manage it, but we are selling our financial institutions to Chinese government operatives on some level through these sovereign wealth funds that were just divvying up the country because it's broke, because of the actions of this particular administration, and we're just relying on outsider money
And I know this is one of those weird on-the-fence kind of topics, but it seems to me that when you push all the small businesses away, you continue to marginalize people by breaking them, by offering them no health care, by offering them no health protection, by offering them no wage, by not having jobs, that you're literally killing them. If you can't adapt, you die. So all you're left with is large monopolies, huge outlets for retail, very few people who are able to afford anything, and they are become the lower class. So it just becomes a relatively sort of delusional lower class that thinks they're middle class, and then just people with a lot of money. And all you can shop at is one store because all the mom-and-pop shops are done, one chain for food. What is happening is something that looks so much like a totalitarian regime that the end game is heading towards that. And that is because of a free market that is supposed to engage in competition. And what it really trickles down to on this country is just a nation of service, food service industry workers almost. Yes, I've asked Robert Reich before, okay, so if we don't have a manufacturing base and if globalization can't be stopped, what do we do for work? And literally at one point in time he said, well, home care is a big field, web design, service industry jobs. So what, are we just going to be a nation of eaters and servers? And where does that money come from ultimately, and how does that not become depleted? It's a grim bit of business. So, all right, one more call on this. Ron, listening in, where is that? Where are you, in Ambler, Pennsylvania?
Yeah, it's a neighborhood of Philadelphia.
No, what's on your mind, bro?
Well, I don't know. I'm just trying to like follow your train of thought, and I don't mean that to be disparaging at all, but I don't know. You said something about the character of America these days, the selfishness. I can't help but try to pinpoint two sort of like focal points that are in the news today. One is the story I read on Comet Dreams from the Guardian UK about food riots.
Yep.
And the other one is I heard this kind of really freaked me out on Democracy Now! About the women who were raped by KBR employees.
Oh yeah.
And the way that was done, and one woman in particular is like, it was very, very savage,
yeah.
Right?
I got to it's horrible, and I got to cut it short. We're going to a break, but thanks for your call, Ron. All right, so we'll be back in a second. It's Marin from Malloy. Stay here.
We'd want greedy speculators, obviously, to profit. We'd want unscrupulous lenders to gain from this and spend taxpayers' dollars on it.
It's Marin in for Malloy. It's just past the bottom of the hour. I don't know how these clocks work. I guess about 35 past. 800-989-1480. But hold your fingers, because I don't like to get hung up on emails. But maybe I got to check myself. Maybe I do. Maybe this is good for tomorrow. Might not be the good last half hour. But I made a comment yesterday in reference to this new book coming out about McCain, the real McCain, and it was an excerpt that McCain and his wife were sitting at a public event, and apparently she made fun of his hair, and he made fun of her makeup, and then called her the C word. So in response to that, I made a joke and said, maybe she is that. Maybe she is the C word. Maybe she is. So I get mail today that was forwarded to me, that was copied to me, of someone trying to get me off the air because I made a joke. And I didn't, that was the joke. I love the Mike, here's the email. I love the Mike Malloy Show. I hope you are having a wonderful week off. But Mark Maron is on the show tonight saying maybe McCain's wife really is a C word. Maybe deserved to be called one by her husband. And according to the schedule, he's on again tomorrow night. Is there enough time to change that plan because of me?
because of this one email. Is there enough time to get him off the air? I don't know how it is decided who will sub for you when you're on vacation, but I don't think it would. I would ever hear you make a similar hateful statement. Now, maybe I'm wrong. I didn't have any hate in my heart when I said that. I thought it was a joke. That's how I believed it to be. But she said this is totally unacceptable and inexcusable. Since I have dial-up, I can't call on the show and listen at the same time. Otherwise, I would, despite his protest that he isn't a misogynist. I am not a misogynist. A misogynist is someone who has hatred or strong prejudice against women. I do not have either of those. I understand when something is said in anger. I understand the word is loaded. But I think that people throw around sexism, they throw around misogyny, you know, so quickly. And it just doesn't exist in me. I have my own insecurities, my own anger issues. I, like everybody else, feels like, you know, I have control issues. But I certainly don't have any hatred towards women in any general way. And is what I said that? I just don't see it. I mean, call me up. You know, set me straight. 800-989-1480. Because I've had this, like, even in the political race, when I've said that I support Obama to people that support Hillary, the immediate thing they say is you're a racist or you're a sexist. And then I say, well, maybe you're a racist, because she actually said in her email, too. I don't think that if someone called Obama's wife an N-word, I would hear anyone on the radio saying, well, maybe she is an N-word and deserved to be called one. Is it really the same thing? I mean, come on. Is that word really the same? Does that really have the history that the N-word has? I mean, I've had these conversations before, and I've chosen, you know, very consciously to work away from political correctness in light of language. But maybe I'm way off base, because I know my heart, and I don't think that comment was misogynistic. I don't think it was sexist. I think it was a joke. I think it was a joke that was easily understood. And I certainly didn't use that word on the radio. Elena, do you have some insight? Oh, I just dumped her. Damn, I just hung up on her by accident. Come back, Elena. I apologize. It's a new machine. I'm trying to get the hang of it. But in terms of, I just don't understand sometimes how these words, if they are not said with hatred, if they are obviously said in moments, and I didn't even say it in a moment of anger, even McCain, inappropriate, and he's a presidential candidate, it was done in public. I don't know if they say that to each other behind closed doors. I don't know what love looks like for some people. Okay. Crandall, listening on the mic in Madison, Wisconsin. What do you have to say? Crandall, hello. You there?
Hello.
That's Mark.
Hi, how are you? I've been listening for 2 hours. I was just asked to respond to this issue that has come up about
McCain's wife.
Comment about his wife.
Yeah.
And they're accusing you, they want you off the air, public airways, because they say you're a hate monger.
Well, they're saying that it was one woman who I aggravated, because I think the C word is very loaded. And I think that me making a joke saying maybe she is one somehow to her meant that I'm some sort of horrendous sexist, misogynistic.
You're sexist, you're a hate monger, you're racist or something. I've been waiting to say this.
Yeah. You're breaking
McCain,
up.
McCain, in his F-14 Tomcat, dropped incendiary bombs in the longest war in America on people pushing a plow and an ox in South Vietnam.
Yeah.
How could you be more of a racist than that?
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. Thanks for your call, Crandall. I mean, that's right. And McCain is a bad guy. And he's an evil guy, and he's a programmable guy, and he's definitely a loose cannon, and in his heart he thinks we can still win the Vietnam War, and that's how he sees wars. There's a lot of people in this country that still believe the pullout of Vietnam was a mistake, and he's one of those people, because he got left holding the bag, he was tortured, and he's resentful, and he's dangerous. That's it, and that's a reality. Okay, here's Elena. Elena in San Francisco, how are you?
Oh, Mark Maron, I'm happy now that I'm talking to you. It's been years.
I know. Am I in trouble? Am I bad?
No, no, dude. I so love you. You might be a total screw-up and really hate yourself, but I think that you don't have hatred for anybody else other than the parts of yourself that you think are bad.
Mm.
I listen to you on Morning Sedition and any other time that I can catch you filling in somewhere.
Yeah.
And I just adore you. And if I thought you were a sexist or a misogynist, I would tell you.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I think you're kind of spot on about me.
Yeah, you're more likely to hate on yourself. You would talk about your body issues. Hey, I was really hoping I could get a story on your deceased cat, Butch, that comes back and visits you in dreams, but I don't think that's going to happen tonight, huh?
Well, I'm really sort of operating without a producer or staff here. So, you know, to really construct those bits and make them what they are, you kind of need the group effort. But hopefully someday someone will say, hey, this guy's okay. Let's put him back on the radio and we'll get those things up and running again. I'd like nothing more than to have that opportunity. And it's certainly nice to hear your voice. Thank you for calling.
I have one small inappropriate comment for you.
As long as it's not it uses any bad words.
Oh, nothing that you're going to get an FCC fine for, I promise.
Okay. What do you got?
Now, I understand that you've already left your wife and you're dating someone else.
She left me.
Oh, whatever. She was crazy and left you. Why the hell didn't you come through San Francisco? I've got red hair and green eyes. I'm a crazy cat person, too. And I love you.
I've been there twice.
I don't want to get married.
I've been there twice. I've been there a couple times.
Well, you didn't call me. How was I to know?
Get on my mailing list. Go to markmaron.com.
I love you, Maron. I'll be listening tomorrow.
Thanks, Elena.
And
take care.
And you are not a sexist.
Thank you. I feel relieved. See you later.
Bye.
Bye. All right. Well, that made me feel better. is this just about me feeling better? Maybe it is. Barbara, listening on the mic in Madison, Wisconsin. How are you? It's
Hello.
Mark. Hello. You're talking to Mark.
Hi, is Barbara from Madison.
I know. It's nice to talk to you. Listen to the mic. I like that station. They were always very, they were one of the real stations that really got behind this format and made it work.
Well, you know, I just finished having a meeting with we have 250 people who are the Friends of Progressive Radio.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent a long time talking about Randy Rhoads and the things she said and what Air America decided to do. And it's interesting because what you're bringing up is a free speech issue.
Yeah.
And I think Noam Chomsky said if you aren't willing to listen to things you don't want to hear from the people who don't agree with you,
yeah,
then what right do you have to speak your opinion?
That's right. And, you know, the interesting thing about free speech is that has been kind of co-opted by corporate entities who make decisions above and beyond whatever constitutional freedoms we have. And usually people are operating at the behest of those corporations or employed by them. So they're stifled. So, you know, a lot of times when you're dealing with these formats and these mediums, it's really an illusion of free speech.
Right. It is, because if the person who wrote you the email was offended by what you said, she could just turn off her radio.
Yeah, but they have to call up the boss. They have to make a big stink. You know, and the Randy issue is interesting. I'll address that a little bit. Thanks for your call, Barbara. Is that they have to call the boss. Call the boss because they were offended. You know, call me. You know, you try to get someone fired. Yeah, in the day and age we live in now, because you heard something that offended you, that guy should be fired. Fire that guy. He's got no right to talk like that. It's unbelievable. What kind of person does that? I don't even think, like, one time I am so not that guy. I'm not a guy that sues people. I'm not a guy that tries to punish people for something like that. It's like, is it that big a thing that you have to ruin someone's livelihood over that? I mean, then you have the issue of IMSO, and then you have to really decipher what is appropriate, what isn't, what is hateful, what is racist, what is irresponsible. And I just don't think that was the case here. And I'm not trying to make a martyr out of myself. It was just really a point of conversation. But, you know, I'll take more calls on this, and I'll answer some other questions in this last segment. And I appreciate all your calls. And it's really great to be on the radio again. So stay with me for a little more time.
With all the colors I know, while you were busy looking into wide blue mirrors and loving the show, that ain't no way to treat a lady, no way to treat your baby.
from a possible fight. Some people figure they can never win. And although this is a fight I can lose, the accused is an innocent man.
All right. It's about 10 till the top of the hour. It's Mark Maron in for Mike Malloy. 800-989-1480. Probably doesn't matter now, though. Coming in on the end of it. Talking about this and that. Talking about language and sexism and what have you. I got another interesting email, too. I think I'll save that. I think I'll save that to for tomorrow to have a deeper discussion about that, about something I can't, that we were talking about yesterday in terms of the troops leaving Iraq. You know, I asked, what happens then? Got to watch my you-knows and my bros and my dudes. I got some interesting input from some people who remember Vietnam, which I was really too young to remember, and how we did just leave, and they did eventually regroup. It's interesting. I don't want to get into that, but you know, perhaps that's something to discuss tomorrow. I was hoping that Hill Harper would come on today. I thought I had a connection there. That didn't pan out, to talk a little bit about Obama and his history. But let's just take a few more calls here, since we're coming up on the end of the show. Hebe, is that for real in Boston? Listen on the internet. You there?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
It's so good to hear you on the radio again.
Oh, thank you.
I was taking notes on what I would talk to you about, but I just lost track because you have such a rich smorgasbord of topics. But I just find it interesting when you're talking about misogyny. You had those two other wonderfully articulate, funny women. And I don't know very many talk shows that get that kind of audience. So, anyway, we missed you in Boston. I was hoping that you would be able to get back to Mr. Tingle's establishment, but alas, that would probably not be possible anymore.
Yeah, it's gone. Hopefully, I'll get up there and I'll let you know if you're on my mailing list. For those of you,
I am.
I'm so happy. Well, I'll certainly see you soon. I hope to get up there. Maybe if I gain some momentum and popularity, they will have me back.
I sure as heck hope so.
Thanks for calling
me. You are missed, and you take good care.
I will. Thank you. You can go to markmaron.com, MarkMaron.com. I got dates there. I'm also on MySpace. What is it? MySpace.com/MarkMaron, MarkMaron. I got my dates listed there. You can contact me through there. Here we go. Let's talk to Eli, listening to KTLK right here in Garden Grove, California. How are you, Eli?
Hello, Mark. I really like you. I think you're much better than Malloy.
Thank you.
Malloy has before he was on, when he was in America, he was so hateful, you know. And if you were trying to approach the other side, you cannot approach them with hate, and that's all he had. Like, day in and day out, he was just yelling and screaming and bashing the conservatives. Most of my friends are conservatives. They're good people. They're just misinformed. They're not bad people.
I think that's right. It took me a long time to learn that, though. You know, some people, it took me an interesting lesson to learn that.
Yes.
But
I think, yes.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead. It's your time.
And I think what Air America did to Randy is good for her. She needs to grow up. I really like her. I know she's good, but she has a big mouth.
Oh, wow.
She does bash Hillary, you know, left and right.
I don't know. But thanks for your call, Eli. I don't know if that's true. No one deserves that. And it was said in a context, and it was said outside of a radio show, and everyone's entitled to their point of view, and it's just words. And I don't think that was handled well. That's my belief about that. But it is interesting what he's saying about reactionary thought and anger towards Republicans and conservatives. I was one of those people. I knew, I got a friend of mine, he used to say, you got to reach out. You got to open the big tent. There are a lot of people on the fence. You don't want to push them off to the other side. And I was like, you know, screw that. Screw them. You know, this is our time. And we got to get some truth here. We got to get some justice, and we got to make them pay. But as it unfolds, you know, people are really, like I said, that we're really the same. And a lot of people are misinformed. And a lot of people, you know, a lot of Republicans now are like, oh, God, what do we get into? What is this? What happened? Okay, hold on. What do we got? We got a couple more. All right, Zoe, how are you again? Zoe?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm here.
What's
it's
up,
Mark.
Babe?
I'm good.
Hey, sorry, the I guess the delay must have. Anyway, never mind.
No problem. Don't worry.
Okay. How are you, sweet pea?
I'm good. I'm fine. I'm feeling good. I had a good time tonight.
Okay. Well, good. Well, listen. All those people backing you up, they're right on the mark. You said what you said, and I knew that you were saying it as a joke.
Couldn't have been more of a joke.
And so you know, on them if they can't take a joke. But I wanted to wrap this up if I could in
what?
A nice little bow for you, sweet, because I love you and that's what I do for you.
Okay.
Okay, you talked about the classism and the fatism and the racism and the misogyny and all this. Everything that people do, whether they strike out at women or people that are different religions or colors or sizes than them, it is all about saying, I am separate from you. And they want to divide themselves off from other people, you know, like the people out there in Texas that are in their own little world out there. But it all has to do with being, you know,
intolerant.
Here it is. Well, yeah, it does have to do with that. But, okay, one of the people that I absolutely love reading and idolize is a Vietnamese monk, and his name is Thich Nhat Hanh.
Yeah.
And one of his best sayings is, we are here to awaken from the illusion of our separateness.
That's right.
So you and your aphids are
right.
All one.
Thank you so much, Zoe. I'll talk to you soon.
You're welcome, Muffin. Take care.
Bye. I actually just got an IM too from a woman who's married to a Buddhist who says I should go just nicely ask the aphids to leave. Just go ahead and ask them that because we are all part of the same Buddha nature. You know what? I'll probably try it. I'll probably go out there tonight and I will nicely ask the aphids to leave. You know, it's no easy task, folks, to be kind. It's no easy task to be a little bit selfless in your life and reach out to people that even drive you crazy and have some forgiveness. It's something I struggle with every day, and I'm not trying to be a message guy here, but as I get older, I realize that being happy is fairly simple if you allow yourself it, and fighting the good fight and picking those fights appropriately are really the way to live a decent life. And to have some personal integrity. I hope you have a good night. Sleep well, and thanks for calling. And try and give your brain a rest. Well, you can't solve it all from your couch. I'll talk to you tomorrow. It's Marin in for Malloy.